As we all know, if people are worried about the safety of their own children, it's next to impossible to do your work on behalf of others.
Welcome back to Adventures in Ed Funding, the podcast series presented by CASBO, the California Association of School Business Officials. This week, our special guest, Mary Jane Burke, Marin County Superintendent of Schools, provides us with another powerful example of how our schools, communities, and government agencies are all stepping up together during these especially tough times to meet the needs of children and families. Marin County in Northern California was one of the first areas to create what are known as pop-up childcare centers to support essential workers at a time when school campuses and regular childcare facilities have been closed due to the pandemic. Marin sprang into action even before Governor Gavin Newsom signed an executive order on April 4th to help facilitate expanding access to childcare. What key steps did they take, and what are some of the early lessons learned? We'll find out. Plus, we'll check in with CASBO's government relations team, Sarah Baches and Elizabeth Esquivel, for a quick update on the status of the California state budget. My name is Paul Richmond, and it's my pleasure to serve as your series guide. We're headed across the Golden Gate Bridge, in a virtual way, of course, to explore more about this story of collaboration, ingenuity, and, as Superintendent Mary Jane Burke explains, a steadfast focus on doing the right thing, even when you don't have all the answers in front of you. Thank you for joining us, Superintendent Burke, and take us into the initial stages, if you will, of planning for these pop-up childcare centers for essential workers.
Once we became aware on, I think, March 13th, which was a Friday, that schools would be closing in the traditional sense beginning the next Monday, we had already been talking about what the needs were going to be in our community. And, you know, immediately we started talking about how would we be able to support an opportunity for healthcare workers to continue to work. And if they had children, we'd have to figure out a strategy that would develop a childcare opportunity for them. By way of background, during the fires this fall, we had here at the Marin County Office of Education offered a childcare option for the first responders. And so we had a little bit of practice, and the community was aware that we would be, you know, supportive of leaning in. But what happened is we essentially got to work with all the partners so that we were actually able to have a soft opening of our child care for healthcare workers the very next Thursday, March 19th.
That is fast turnaround. And before we dive into more of the details, can you tell us a bit more about your county?
Marin County is located on the opposite side of the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. We have about 260,000 people who live in our community and approximately 40,000 students that we serve in the TK-12 system. Marin County is a county that some describe as being an area with a great deal of privilege. And while there are many children and families that have a lot of opportunity, the fact is that 30% of the students in our community are students that live in families where the family of four makes less than $644 a week. It also is a community where there's great support for public education, and our community has over time been willing to pay more through volunteer time, support to PTAs, foundations, but also tax themselves to ensure that our schools are able to meet the needs of all the children in a comprehensive way. It's a great community to be involved in public education.
And you've been serving in the role of superintendent for a number of years now?
I have. I actually started in our community as an instructional assistant in a special ed class about 45 years ago, and I've had the privilege of serving as a superintendent of schools for our community for the last 26 years.
Wow. And so you mentioned that partnerships have been absolutely vital to getting these childcare centers up so quickly. Can you share with us more about that?
I will tell you that we have great partnerships in our community that have developed over time. And just to give you a sense of who the partners are involved in this, and all deserve very significant credit. It was the Office of Emergency Services, the County of Marin, our library, for a First Five, the Marin Child Care Council, which serves as our resource and referral agency, North Bay Children's Center, Community Action Marin, the 18 school districts in Marin County, the YMCA, the City of San Rafael. We worked with our teacher and classified unions, and our Marin Community Foundation has been a partner as well. And so everybody put their heads together and said, okay, what are we going to need? And, you know, ultimately we knew that we would need to figure out how to support students of all ages. So the North Bay Children's Center and Community Action Marin raised their hands to do the infant and preschool component. And then the TK-12 system, we raised our hands to address the school age component in the elementary area. And then we also collaborated with our library to do the middle school through high school.
And can you give us a sense of how many sites are now up, and where are some of those sites?
Sure. So currently we have 6 sites that are open. And the request that came at the very beginning was that they wanted us to place where we could open the schools to provide the housing at schools that were close to our hospital. So we have 3 different hospitals in Marin, one in Novato, one in San Rafael area, and one in Central Marin. So we chose schools in those areas, and that helped have, you know, proximity for the healthcare workers to be able to know their kids were close. So that's how we started. We have 6 sites open, and we are currently able to serve over 264 slots, if you will. The way that we determined like who would be eligible, we started by prioritizing healthcare workers. So that was the first group, and then went to first responders, whether law enforcement, fire, et cetera. And then as we started seeing the emerging areas of need, home healthcare aides sort of leaned in next. And then now we are open to all essential workers. And so for us, essential workers include, you know, grocery store workers. In some cases, it could be classroom teachers, gas station attendants, et cetera. So at this point, we have it open to all the essential workers.
And so the way it works then, if I'm, say, a hospital worker, and now my local schools have been closed and my regular childcare facilities are closed, I'm able to sign up for this program and bring my children to one of these sites?
Exactly. We have a central sign up. So anybody who's going to access goes through a central place that they're signed up, and that is in collaboration with the Marin County Office of Education and the County of Marin. Then, you know, someone connects with them to find out what their needs are, because there's definitely protocols in place from a public health standpoint about how we can fill these slots. And so then they essentially get assigned a slot. And it is something that we've seen it grow a bit. You know, when this all started, I think most of us were of the belief that this would not necessarily be long-term, that it might be for a few weeks until, quote, school reopened, maybe for us after the spring break. And as we now know, it's become long-term. And so people who in the beginning knew that they could make this work within their own family for a couple of weeks, but now that we know this is going to be going through the end of the school year at least, that we've had more people access And so we are, you know, we're prepared to open. New schools have already been identified. And so more people need the support. We'll be able to open more classes.
And where do the resources come from to support these?
Yeah, so I'll just go with the TK-12 concept. So essentially, what we're doing is offering this to families for free, and we're staffing with local partners, whether it's the YMCA or a school staff, and they would be working anyway, right? So they're essentially assigned as disaster service workers. And when I say assigned, I want you to know that all the people that are currently staffing these pop-up child cares are raising their hands as volunteers, right? They want to have the opportunity. So essentially, we're using our own resources, and whoever the custodial staff is at the school is essentially providing that support. When it comes to the infant and preschool, originally it was provided for free, and then they were looking at a fee-for-service model to provide support along with some scholarships that are made available through our Marin Community Foundation and our County of Marin. But given some of the steps the governor has most recently taken, it looks like the financial support will be available to provide these services free to all the essential workers.
That's great. That's good news.
Right. It really is.
Yeah. What kind of things are you hearing so far about these sites?
One of the main things I think that's on sort of the front of mind of everyone is, you know, how are we making sure that we keep the kids safe, right? And monitoring. So Marin County is part of the 6 Bay Area community, and the public health officers really work very, very closely. So the protocols that were developed in collaboration with the other public health officers. And so there's some parameters that are very specific. For example, it has to be a stable cohort of 12 students. So it's not a situation that you could have any 12 students. Once you open the childcare pop-up, it is for essentially that stable cohort of 12 students and staff. So there's no mixing. We have set up situations that provide for a separate restroom for that group. The outdoor activities are coordinated and scheduled with separate access to playground, toys, balls, you know, et cetera. Designated hand washing times before the students enter each day. They're checked in terms of their make sure they're healthy, their temperature's checked. There's a midday temperature check, midday disinfectant and wipe down of the cohort spaces. There are personal classroom supplies that are not shared for individual kids, obviously trying to do everything around physical distancing. And then, you know, kids are not sharing stuff like Play-Doh, et cetera. Also, now we are, given the new guidelines that have been supported, is, you know, having both adults and kids wear face covering. And also just trying to make sure that people felt comfortable. So I think that's like number one, right? I want to make sure my kid is healthy and safe with you. And so that's one thing that I feel like we've been able to do a really good job of, and people feel very comfortable, both the adults and the kids. And, you know, what we hear about it is just such a great deal of thankfulness, that understanding that these essential workers are doing the most important work right now in our community as it relates to trying to flatten this curve, provide the care that people need. But as we all know, if people are worried about the safety of their own children, it's next to impossible to do your work on behalf of others. And so we hear a lot of appreciation, you know, for that.
Yeah, it sounds like such a powerful example of how public schools and partners are really stepping up in their communities to help.
It really is. And, you know, as I think about it, it would be hard if you didn't have pre-existing relationships with the partners to get something going quickly, it wouldn't be impossible, but one of the things that I would say makes me the most proud of this particular community has to do with the willingness for everyone to understand how really interconnected we are. In other words, you can't have great schools without great healthcare and law enforcement and a county that's working in collaboration on behalf of services to kids and families. And so we have a lot of very strong leaders who lead with a lot of humility. And I think at times like this, you know, everybody's looking at each other and saying, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do the right thing on behalf of an entire community, which I think occasionally, you know, how people can work in a siloed, using more of a siloed strategy. And I would say in Marin, we have not always, we're not perfect for sure, but in most cases, you find an amazing interconnectedness. That's really the part of how we work on behalf of most issues, which helped us as it relates to this particular situation. But I do want to give credit, you know, San Francisco, I think, was actually a bit ahead of Marin. And so when we were first, like, you know, even though it was just, you know, it was happening in real time, but San Francisco had begun some of this work, and that was one of the first places we looked to see how they were figuring out how to prioritize, but also how to develop a strategy so that there could be a single quote enrollment, you know, point of entry that would make it easier for families as well as ultimately for the kids. So hats off to San Francisco.
Yeah, definitely. A shout out to San Francisco. And it sounds like it's always valuable to be able to learn and see what others are doing. So now that you've had the chance to be rolling this out, you mentioned the importance of relationships. Are there some other tips that you would want to provide to some of your colleagues around the state?
Sure. I think people want to do the right thing if you can find the path for them to join. And I think that's what happened here. There can be so many areas that can jump in front of you, sort of the roadblocks. What about insurance? Who's going to pay? How are we, you know what I mean? All the things that come up in a typical bureaucratic system, right? And I think what we tried to do here that did help us was say, if we do the right thing, you know, if you build it right, it's going to be okay. So we really did sort of say, hey, this is too important to wait until we can answer every single question, because there's so many. And so we just said, okay, we're walking arm in arm with public health, right? The most important partner as we stepped forward in this work, but also knew that ultimately it was going to work out. And it did, right? The governor essentially did, you know, a few weeks later, make the determination that there would be more supports available. And I guess maybe a different way to say it is the term growth mindset. You know, we can do this. We just have to figure out how to do it. But key is doing it in collaboration with partners, knowing there's no one right way. But if we collaborate and think together on behalf of the right thing to do, that we can find our way there. Already I'm reading about other places that are providing these kinds of services. The models might be a little different. The partners might be a little different, but the intent is absolutely the same. Do the right thing when no one's looking, and ultimately the community will be there to support.
That's great advice from a leader who has always championed community engagement and partnership, and understands well that one person and one organization cannot go at it alone and be successful. As my conversation with Mary Jane Burke wrapped up, she shared one final story that really left an impression. It's not specifically about pop-up childcare centers, but rather about making sure that as we all navigate this COVID-19 crisis, We make sure to notice all the amazing things, large and small, that people are doing.
This is, to me, a very special story. One of my teachers ended up testing positive and ended up in one of our local hospitals on a respirator. And I was trying to, you know, stay in communication with his family, which I did, but also with him. And on an evening last week, his uncle called me and said, if you call right now and ask for Elena, you're going to get to talk with him. And so I called the ICU and asked to speak with Elena, who is an ICU nurse. And she picked up the phone, and I'm sure, long, hard, tired day. Elena, could I please speak with, you know, and I mentioned the name of the teacher. And she said, of course you can, but here's what you have to do. I need you to wait because I have to re-put on, right, all of her PPE to go back in. And so, and then she reminded me that, don't forget, he can't answer you. So you can talk to him. And so, you know, I waited for a few minutes. They transferred me to her. She took the phone, put it on his ear, and then interpreted his reaction for me. So imagine I got to, you know, say, how are you doing? I just want you to know we're sending you strength. You got this. And then she says, well, you know, he just gave you a thumbs up, right? And that to me is just such a great example of the human spirit, right? She had every reason to be too tired, too busy, whatever. And it meant the world, right? That I got for a few moments to actually interact with this amazing educator. So I guess I would say, let's all of us watch for those moments because they're there. They're happening everywhere around us. And I think that will help buoy and lift us when we feel overwhelmed with not knowing. And that's a hard space to be in, I think, especially for leaders, is that, you know, we want to know. And this is evolving in a way that mostly we have to be in this not knowing space and yet be able to lead with compassion and caring and courage.
It is a tough space. And I pray that the teacher that you spoke with is on the road to recovery.
Absolutely. In fact, within about 3 days of that time, he was texting me, and his work is not done. I'm excited that he's on the mend, and, you know, definitely will have a story to tell all of us about his path back to recovery.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of closes that symbiotic loop between our educators and our health workers and, you know, all of our essential people.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Superintendent Burke.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm happy to get a chance to talk with you and stay healthy.
You as well. Please take care. We are joined again today by the leaders of CASBO's government relations team, Sarah Botchez and Elizabeth Esquivel. Welcome back, Sarah and Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for having us.
A whole lot has happened since we last spoke to the two of you about 3 weeks ago. So, Sarah, catch us up. From a fiscal standpoint, we know the economic fallout from this pandemic has been harsh, and projections for state revenues are down substantially.
Every day is a blur because there's a lot of information. And so the assumption is that the state will receive about $19.8 billion in revenue from April through June of 2020. That's about 39% of the estimated receipts for this period, reflecting then on the governor's January budget. Department of Finance had released in March a letter to all of the state agencies indicating a workload budget for 2020-21.
And this term, a workload budget, I had to look that up. Essentially, it means that programs would receive only the budget year cost of the authorized services, adjusted for changes in things like enrollment or caseload or population or other factors like inflation or court-ordered mandates. So it's pretty bare bones. Sarah, what's going on at the Capitol now?
the Department of Finance is meeting every day with their economists, trying to project out how much can we sustain of the 2019-20 budget moving forward. I think that this budget, similar to when we entered the Great Recession, will be done in a series. We will see a budget in May that will be approved in June, but there's discussions of how do we move forward and update it once we do see additional revenues trickling in August and September. What we've known and what we've been discussing as education advocates is how do we continue to build the momentum that for education, since Proposition 98 lives in general fund, making sure that workload indicates continuing to fund the statutory COLA and special education, making that a top priority as we move into the 2020-21 budget.
I wanted to bring you in, Elizabeth. I know one of the big events this week was that the Senate resumed its budget committee hearings. So what did you find out from that hearing?
So there were about 10,000 people trying to log in. And I feel like that's a huge amount of interested people trying to hear what the legislature has to say. I just think everything is moving so fast and in real time that it was important for the members to hear and be in tune with what's happening. They do have a say, and there's clearly a high level interest in finding out more about how the dollars are being sent out for COVID-19, since they did pass the legislation in releasing $1 billion. The Legislative Analyst Office and the Department of Finance did a really great job in providing updates, information, and answering questions. It was a long hearing, but I feel like it was needed.
And the assembly is scheduled to come back and meet early next week. Is that right?
Yes. So the Assembly Budget Committee is going to have their overview hearing, and that's scheduled to take place on Monday, April 20th at 10 a.m.
And does anybody in the legislature have the ability to create more money? I'm just joking. We need more revenue, right?
Paul, only the federal government can print money.
Well, that is a good segue into the federal part of all this. Sarah, what can you tell us about the federal relief funds?
California is expected to receive $15.3 billion from the Coronavirus Relief Fund, and of which $5.8 billion will be allocated to local governments with populations of at least 500,000 people. And these funds are to reimburse necessary expenditures that have occurred due to health emergencies. On the education side, we're expecting to see $1.6 billion that will be distributed to Title I schools, and then about $355 million at the discretion of Governor Newsom to use for K-12 and early education and higher education purposes. All of the education management groups have submitted a statement in how we would like to see those funds be as flexible as possible to be utilized for every LEA to have access to meet the needs to serve the students during this environment.
And Sarah, I know you worked for one of the legislative budget committees during the Great Recession. What early signs are you seeing here? And what can we do to avert the painful budget cuts that came out of that period?
It totally triggers memories of December of 2007. We did not have state reserves, and it was a tough road towards recovery. I feel that this time around, we know what's coming, and we have the ability to prepare, unlike the past. We have seen movement from both Sacramento and Washington, D.C., where it's normally known as a stalemate environment, and yet we have seen a stimulus package pass through, continuation of additional supports and services coming online from the federal government, which is where we need to focus our attention and letting them know that education has to be part of any conversation to rebuild the economy. We are critical. Parents now more than ever are seeing the value that education provides, the safety and nutrition to each and every student. And so I think we're in a different environment in terms of we are seen as critical and essential. And it is up to us to speak up and make sure that as they deliberate on the 2020-21 budgets in a month from now, that we are part of the recovery plan and not the chopping table.
And I understand that the two of you are planning an upcoming webinar that will delve into these topics in a lot more detail. Is that right?
Yes. Elizabeth and I are recording a webinar early next week, and it should be released shortly, where we will focus on the state economy and the state budget projections, as well as information on the release of federal funds and support, and any additional guidance that we see from the Department of Education, as well as the U.S. Department of Education and U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Great. And so that'll be sent out by email as soon as it's available?
Yes. We will send it out through our CASBO email accounts.
Excellent. Anything else that you'd like people to know about the state of the state budget as of today, knowing that things change by the hour?
It's important to speak now as the budget is being deliberated, as members from both Assembly and the Senate are engaging. It is very important to let them know what you're working on, what your LEAs are doing to develop educational services and plans, the needs in your community. We've had great opportunities to engage with the state superintendent, Tony Thurman. We're part of a working group discussion that meets on a weekly basis. So we're here to represent our members and to continue advocating for public education as a whole. But it's truly a time to start engaging with our elected officials as they return next month to begin the budget discussions.
And that's where we'll leave things, with a call to action to keep on communicating with legislators and state and federal officials. Many thanks to Elizabeth Esquivel and Sarah Botchez for providing a quick budget update. Look for their upcoming webinar, and we'll continue to check back with them as we get closer to the governor's May revision of the state budget. A very special thanks again, too, to Marin County Superintendent Mary Jane Burke for sharing the inspiring work in her county to provide childcare to essential workers. And most of all, thanks to you for making time to join us on Adventures in Ed Funding, this series presented by CASBO. We greatly appreciate your interest in the show. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And hey, if you like what you're hearing, give us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps more people to discover us. As always, we'll post more information and links related to pop-up childcare, the budget, and other news covered in this episode on our show notes online. My name is Paul Richman, and I'm your series guide. Tommy Dunbar handles all of our music and editing. Until next time, maintain those safe physical distances, but please stay connected to one another. Play us out, Tommy.
He just gave you a thumbs up.